Hello and welcome to Pick of the Month, the programme where we look back at some of the highlights in our broadcasting schedule over the last 30 days or so. A story that was in the headlines for much of last month was the industrial action at Czech car maker Škoda Auto, one of the Czech Republic's most successful companies. The dispute ended with Škoda workers receiving a pay rise of just under 13%, a move which raised eyebrows in the international press. The outcome of the strike prompted major news carriers like the International Herald Tribune to speculate that rapidly rising wages in this country could bring the recent boom in foreign investment to an abrupt end, as investors started moving their money to other countries with lower wage costs. In an edition of Talking Point on this subject, economist Tomáš Sedláček told me he thought developments at Škoda were actually a good thing, and reflected the positive way in which the Czech economy has evolved since the fall of communism.
Škoda car, as most of the listeners I'm quite sure remember, was a very lousy car, and very few people in the West would buy Škoda car because it was such a low quality car. It was a cheap car, but it wasn't a spectacular car like it is today. Now, we knew that we had to compete in those years back with price. So we produced a medium quality car that was very, very, very cheap. And that's how we broke into the market. And that's how we made our living, so to speak, in the first decade of our transformation. But that was something that we couldn't have lingered in that position for a long time. So after a little while, Škoda used this cushion or this pillow of low wages to make Škoda car into a very, very, very good and quite expensive car. It is a standard car and a car that nobody can be ashamed of driving on the streets. But it no longer is cheap. It's a car that has very well positioned itself on the Western markets, and that's exactly the way we would like to see the Czech Republic as well.
Economist Tomáš Sedláček there on the significance of a recent industrial dispute at the Škoda car factory.
Když je dnes člověku 20. Chce se mu hnusem zvracet. Ale těm...
The sound of Czech poet and philosopher Egon Bondy, performing with Czech underground band The Plastic People of the Universe. Bondy, who died in April at 77 years of age, was a prominent figure in the Czechoslovak anti-establishment scene during the communist era, and he inspired many who fought against the oppression of those times. Here's an excerpt from a report we broadcast by Jan Wellinger, which looked back on Bondy's life and career.
Člověk ze zoufalství sáko, pomáte se.
Bondy was a prominent member of the anti-establishment scene, and his works were an inspiration for many within or on the edges of the underground movement, as well as for students at the time lucky enough to get their hands on clandestine copies of his work. Literature professor, singer and Radio Prague contributor Pavla Jonsonova indicated in 2003 that Bondy had a huge impact on her generation.
In spite of all the very oppressive circumstances of the late 70s, the young people were so excited about like sharing documents of Charter 77 and distributing various forms of the Samizdat writers, be it Havel, Vaculík or Grusha. But especially we loved Egon Bondy. For us, the most exciting figure, as a revolutionary philosopher and poet, he combined everything that we expected of a hero and a literary hero at that.
The sound of dissident rock band The Plastic People of the Universe, who collaborated closely with the recently deceased Czech poet and philosopher Egon Bondy. American novelist Kurt Vonnegut Jr. was another prominent writer who passed away in April. Vonnegut's subversive writing style was a big hit with Czechoslovak readers in the 1970s and 80s. The man himself was also popular with Czech dissidents, not least because of the support he gave some persecuted jazz enthusiasts in Czechoslovakia in the mid-1980s. In an edition of Panorama, Jan Richter looked at this little-known aspect of Vonnegut's colourful career.
Mm-hmm. Kurt Vonnegut Jr. not only earned the admiration of a great number of Czech readers, but also stood up in defense of the Czech dissident movement in the 1980s. During that time, he visited Czechoslovakia as a guest of the American embassy and met some of the culture figures who were under pressure from the regime. Several of these activists were part of the so-called Jazz Section, an independent culture organization which promoted jazz music, organized concerts, and published books in communist Czechoslovakia. As Kurt Vonnegut later told American television, the group was about far more than just jazz.
It's about having a good time in life now and then. It's being a little playful, being a little childish, being a little open. And this is generally much resented by dictators and bureaucrats and dictatorships. And this has been the case in Czechoslovakia. My contact with the jazz group is a jazz section. As I visited Czechoslovakia and met several of them, and they had me plant a tree and water it. And then a couple of months later, as John Updike came, and I had him plant a tree. And both those trees have now been cut down by the government. They didn't last very long.
That TV interview was broadcast shortly after the Jazz Freedom Concert in Washington, D.C., which Kurt Vonnegut helped to organize in December 1987 in support of the Jazz Section. The previous year, the organization had been banned by the authorities and several of its members sentenced to prison. Following the 1986 arrest of members of the Jazz Section, Kurt Vonnegut wrote an editorial for the New York Times entitled, "Can't They Even Allow Jazz?" There he expressed his opinion on the repression of freedom that was taking place in Czechoslovakia.
Of all the triumphs of life haters today, of fun haters today, of beauty haters today, of thought and love haters today, of the forces of Satan, if you will, the one that most troubles my heart is the inducement of some Czechoslovak politicians and police to behave like cannibals towards the most humane and generous and gifted members of their society. These people are rooted like the saplings in a tiny nation whose people have created a major fraction of the earth's most important architecture, sculpture, painting, music, poetry, imaginative prose, and most recently, motion pictures. If a flying saucer person were to ask me what earthlings considered to be their most habitable city, architecturally speaking, I would reply without hesitation, "Come with me to Prague."
The words of American writer Kurt Vonnegut Jr., whose death was mourned by many in the Czech Republic.
Willkommen in Sachsenhausen.
A trailer from the German language picture called Die Falscher, or The Counterfeiter, which was premiered at this year's Berlin Film Festival. Die Falscher is based on the remarkable memoirs of Slovak-born Adolf Berger, who has now been living in Prague for 6 decades. Along with 140 other Jewish concentration camp prisoners, he survived the Second World War after being enlisted to take part in a daring Nazi counterfeiting plot aimed at destroying the economies of the Allies. In another edition of Panorama, this time by Ian Willoughby, Berger, who is now 89, told Radio Prague about his time working as a forger for the Third Reich.
Byli okna zabíleni, aby se nevidělo dovnitř, a když mi...
The windows were painted over so nobody could see in. When they took us to wash once a week, they were afraid we would die. The whole camp, prisoners and SS men, had to go indoors. Nobody was allowed to see us. Not even the Sachsenhausen camp commander, only the secret service.
When Adolf Berger says the Nazis didn't want him and his co-counterfeiters to die, he means in the short term, before their work was complete.
"140 Jewish typographers were not meant to survive. We should have been liquidated. But things turned out differently. After we'd made £31 million, they then wanted dollars. There was one Jew called Jakobsen from Holland, my superior, so to speak. He said, if we print those dollars, we'll drag the war out. We have to sabotage it. But that's easier said than done."
Dollars were harder to counterfeit than pounds, and Berger and his co-prisoners did manage to drag out the process of successfully producing fake greenbacks. Until, that is, they were told to do so within 6 weeks or face a firing squad. But by that time, the Soviets were close to Berlin. Counterfeiting group were put on a train bound for the Austrian Alps, to one of the Nazis' few remaining strongholds in the last days of the war in Europe. Crates of fake money were dumped along the way. Adolf Berger expected he and his co-prisoners would be executed, but after a period of some confusion, they eventually found themselves abandoned by the Nazis on May 5, 1945. He and the other counterfeiters were free. They had survived.
Ian will be there with the story of former concentration camp prisoner and money forger Adolf Berger. That brings us to the end of this edition of Pick of the Month. Don't forget that you can hear the full versions of all the reports you heard today on our website at radio.ca.